All right, are we ready for the jury?
Yeah, I'd like to take up one issue about the jail calls. I'm going to recall Mr. Jarrett. I know you had indicated you wanted to know the dates. As I put on in testimony, Mr. Jarrett just deals with the files mainly. However, after I was reviewing some over lunch, some of the other discs that I had, the dates are on there. So I can have him see the dates, and he would know what dates the files were. I wanted to make sure, so I didn't, you know, have to have this argument in front of the jury, that would suffice. I would show him the discs, and he could tell me whether, you know, the dates that he had on the discs, and if that would suffice. I wanted to make sure that it's the state's stance that the audio itself, what's contained and what is said on those discs, would speak for itself. But I just wanted to make sure that the dates, if Mr. Jarrett could testify to that, would suffice.
Would suffice for what?
I had asked for them to be entered into evidence. You had stated you're not admitting them into evidence until you find out the date. You haven't heard any dates.
So the dates are not contained upon the recording itself?
They're on the files. Right, so I can open up, I can put the CD in, and he would be able to tell me the dates of the files of the actual conversations.
Okay, so well, I think I know what you're saying, and all I can say is I can't tell you yes or no until I hear the evidence.
Okay, I was just, sounds good. I just wanted to make sure that the audio would speak for itself. I mean, Trooper Williams can speak to what's contained on the discs. Mr. Jarrett doesn't listen to the discs. However, what my plan will be now is to put Mr. Jarrett on, even though he can't tell me what's on the disc. I think the audio speaks for itself. And so I guess if I had to call, I'll call Mr. Jarrett, and then if I had to recall Mr. Trooper Williams after that, I can do that as well.
Trooper Williams is still on the stand. He's not right, the subject to cross.
Right, I know. I mean, after I recall Mr. Jarrett. Okay.
So you're wanting to recall Mr. Jarrett before you do anything further with Trooper Williams?
I can do that. That would work.
I just want to know what you want to do.
That would work best for Mr. Jarrett. He can't be here tomorrow, and to ensure that he is done with his testimony, that would be the best.
All right. That's everything. Good afternoon. You may proceed.
I recall Mark Jarrett at this time, Your
Honor. Sir, remember that you're still under oath.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
Mr. Jarrett, could you just state your name for the court one more time?
Yes, sir. It's Mark Jarrett.
And Mr. Jarrett, we were talking about the phone calls that you had downloaded while Mr. Deegan was incarcerated, correct?
Yeah, that's correct, sir.
And you were saying that you provided the prosecuting attorney's office with a number of calls?
Yes, sir.
And I had shown you the disc that contained some of those calls, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. And do you know the dates of that those calls took place?
No, sir, I don't.
Okay. If I showed you the files, would you be able to tell me what those dates were?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So for this top one, for this, well, out of this file, can you tell me how you would determine what the date is from the call?
Yes, sir. Once you click on the file folder up there and open it up.
Okay.
And then click on that and open it up. Now scroll across, please. And that would be, may I, sir? May I step down, Judge?
Yes.
The date of this phone call was 11/24 of 2015. At 6:57 p.m. For a duration of 15 minutes.
Okay, so this phone call took place on November the 24th, 2015.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. And then this other one, if I go to the same place, will you be able to?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
May I step down, Judge? This call took place on October the 5th, 2015 at 8:06 p.m. for a duration of 14 minutes and 58 seconds.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, and as we already discussed, you had said that you looked at these files and this disk, these two files, and you can tell that those were the complete and accurate files that you had provided to the prosecuting attorney's office, correct?
Yes, sir, on the original disk, yes, sir.
At this time, Your Honor, I'd like to move State's Exhibit Number 3 into evidence.
Mr. Deegan?
Well, I still object. There's some problems here when he popped that up there.
Okay.
That I'd like, if he could put that back in, I'd like to point that out.
Please. Which one would you like out?
Either one, because they both have the same problem that I saw. Okay. Either one, doesn't matter.
Where do you want to go?
To open it back up like you did.
This?
Yeah, and open the file. Yeah. Okay, now, I noticed here, if you'll go to the right, you said this was from 11/24/1857. Okay, so that would be 6:57 at night. And if we go back to the left, we notice that it has a date modified. So, and this date was after the other date. So what does that mean when it's been modified?
That means that's the date that I downloaded the call from the prosecution.
Okay. And so you're saying that that is the date that you, date and time that you took it down. And is that the default name on the file? Is that what it shows up when you download it from this system, this drive?
That's what
somewhere?
That's one of the things that shows up, yes, sir.
Okay, so that's automatic naming.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so you're testifying that the modification, because modified normally means to change. And so I just want to make sure that doesn't mean that this was in any way changed. That just strictly means that that's the date and time that you downloaded it or accessed it for the first time.
That's the time that I downloaded onto a disk for the first time.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And this is a disk that only has the two calls on it, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So and did you make that disk with just the two calls on it?
No, sir. Not that one.
So you can't authenticate that.
I cannot.
No, go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I cannot authenticate
the disk, I can't authenticate the calls that are on that disk.
Okay.
Because I modified them.
Okay. And do you have a record of modifying them?
It would be in my computer at my office, yes, sir.
Okay, and that's not here?
It would be in my computer at my office.
Okay,
in Charleston.
Okay. I'm a little confused, so forgive me, because I'm trying to get this straight in my head. The two calls that's on that disk was pulled from another big disk, but you didn't pull it.
Those two calls?
Right. That's on this disk right here.
No, sir. I did not pull those off the original disk. No, sir.
Okay. So that was done. You just handed over the disk with everything on it. Someone else did.
The authentic calls. That's correct.
And then someone else did it. So you can't actually authenticate this as a true, accurate, complete, is what I'm trying to get at. Because you didn't make the copy.
I can authenticate the two phone calls upon that disk, but not the actual disk itself. But I can authenticate the calls.
And how do you authenticate them if you didn't make the copy?
Because of the way that the file's on there and the date that I modified them.
Okay.
That's my modification.
Okay, but it... You'll have to forgive me. I'm not trying to be rude, but I'm trying to understand what you're saying. Could you explain, maybe that'll make it easier, could you explain how you can say that these are true, accurate, and complete just from looking at a date and time modified on a disk that you did not create and you did not pull these files from the other disk? Does that make sense to you, what I'm saying?
First and foremost, I've been doing this concept for about 7 years now, and as well as the file numbers that are on there, that would tell me that it's from the original calls that I downloaded.
Okay, so you're talking about like the BIUFK, BOL?
That would be a particular file number for a phone call.
That would be a particular file number. But that's created automatically by the service or whatever it is that collects these.
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. But you can modify those names.
No, sir, I cannot.
You can't modify digital things in a computer.
No, sir. We are unable to modify anything at our level. Nothing can be modified. Once it's in the database, it's there until it's cleaned out within 2 years. Nothing can be changed.
That would go against common sense because I could go in there right now and change all that information. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Not with the GTL system, we can't.
Okay. Okay.
It's locked. It's locked in there.
So, if I were to open this up in a different way, in a different program, other than the laser player, I could not go in and change this data that's on there in any way, shape, or form with any other program out there.
Not that I'm aware of, sir.
Okay. Okay. That's all I have.
Any other questions?
No, Your Honor.
Well, let me ask you this, and maybe I misunderstood some questions from Mr. Deegan, but let's say you open this up. Is it voice or is it words when you open that up?
When you open that up, sir, it would be voice.
Okay. And can you go in and take out words or add in words to that file?
No, sir.
And that is why?
Well, it's just the way GTL has that program set up. We cannot go in. The only thing we can do is go in, listen to, and download the calls. We cannot modify the calls in any way whatsoever, Your Honor.
So you can't take things out or add words in?
No, sir, we cannot.
All right.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Because he brought up yesterday.
Well, you can't say anything. You can ask the witness questions.
Well, I had an objection based upon what he just said.
Okay.
And he had mentioned yesterday that he was going to try to edit the calls, but that it would take a little time. And so that would seem to conflict with what he just said, unless I'm misunderstanding what you asked him. Were you asking him if you open it up and play the audio file, can you take audio out of it? Is that
right.
Okay? And that's what he was attempting to do, and said that he was going to, and that was yesterday.
Right. We don't know the method by which he was going to do it. We don't know that it was going to be in that. In other words, he may copy it over in some other form or tape recorder or something like that. We don't know that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, any other questions for this witness?
No, Your Honor. I'd move for the state's exhibit number 3 to be admitted as evidence.
I still object because I think there's some issues there that I've raised that have not really. I mean, it's not clear in my mind that it hasn't been altered in any way.
All right. State's Exhibit 3 is admitted. Do we need the services of Mr. Jarrett anymore?
I will not need Mr. Jarrett anymore.
May be excused from the stand and from further attendance.
Yes.
Mr. Deegan?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jarrett. You're excused from the stand and from further attendance.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next witness, please.
I'd recall Trooper Williams.
Please recall that you're still under oath.
Yes, sir.
Trooper Williams, we heard that conference call before we broke for lunch, and I just want to go over a few things about that conference call with you. And first of all, you had already testified, I believe, that you can identify Thomas Deegan's voice. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And whenever you identified that voice on the conference call, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So whenever you say you identified Thomas Deegan's voice on the conference call, was he the individual, or did you recognize his voice as the individual that was being called Tom or Thomas on the video?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's correct.
Just to be clear, I want to play just a snippet so the jury can hear and make sure that we understand which voice you're talking about.
Okay.
Snippet. Is that the voice that you had identified as Thomas Deegan's voice?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Upon reviewing that conference call, in terms of its implications for the Capitol in Charleston, West Virginia, what did you do, or was there anything done by any law enforcement agencies?
Yes, sir, there was.
Did they take it seriously?
Very seriously.
Okay, and just generally, what was anything done?
There was additional manpower that was transferred to the from the academy and all over the state to the Capitol to assist with making sure the grounds were secured, along with Capitol PD. They brought their own extra people in to assist to make sure that anyone that was actually inside the Capitol would actually be able to be viewed inside the Capitol.
So this wasn't just the West Virginia State Police that was involved?
No, sir. There was Charleston PD, Canuck City Parks, the Capitol PD, which is stationed there at the, they have their own police department at the Capitol, and the State Police, along with Canuck County Sheriff's Department, was put on standby, and Charleston Police Department.
Was the FBI involved in any way?
Yes, they were. They were there assisting. Mainly from the office standpoint, if we need any intelligence or anything like that, they were available.
So there were a number of agencies that had responded?
Very, very many.
In your investigation, did you come across any other videos that involved Thomas Deegan where he talked about this conference call?
Yes, sir. There was a YouTube video.
And can you tell me just generally about that video?
It was an interview from a gentleman from Canada who interviewed Thomas Deegan in reference to his conference call that was made on the 14th, which we already played today.
And in that, I believe you said in that interview he had talked about the conference call that we heard today?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. And was that, you said that that interview was on YouTube?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did you get that interview on disc?
Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, is YouTube an open site? Is it for everyone?
Yes, sir. It's an open source site. Everybody can log in. If the user wants to restrict it, then he can make it 18 or over or require you to sign in and authenticate yourself.
Okay. And so you place it on disc, and can you just generally tell me how you did that?
I've attended some numerous training for cell phone and other media device, and there's several third-party programs out there that you can use to snip or grab videos and place them on disk.
May I approach a witness, Your Honor?
You may.
Will the record reflect I'm showing the defendant what's been marked as State's Exhibit Number 5? Trooper Williams, I'm showing you what's been marked as State's Exhibit Number 5. Can you tell me what that is?
It's a copy that I prepared for the prosecutor's office, and it has a label that I affixed to the disc after I burned the disc.
And that's a copy of what?
Of the YouTube video.
Okay. And is that a true and accurate copy of the YouTube video?
Yes, sir, it is.
And has that this been modified in any way?
No, sir.
Your Honor, at this time I move to admit State's Exhibit Number 5 into evidence.
I would object until I've seen it. I don't know if it's what I've what
I mark this.
I failed to do that.
All right, and your objection was you need to see the video?
Yeah, I would need to see that it's the same thing that he's given me before I could just say that it's a full video.
All right, well, as we play it then, if you have any objection, you need to say so and we'll stop it. So if you object, you need to stop it.
Okay.
Other than that, then, the State's Exhibit 5 is provisionally admitted, and yes, you may publish it to the jury.
And Trooper Williams, about how long is this video?
I believe it's an hour and 47 minutes, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, everybody. Robert J. Morris here with Rick B. In the house, we got Thomas Deegan, who was the centerpiece of the conversation in the conference call that we covered last Friday on the podcast. Thomas, say hey to everybody.
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
Tom, explain to everybody. There's a lot of confusion about what the intentions are here. We'll go into different aspects later, but what was your major focus on what you're trying to accomplish?
The major focus was simply to return the government to be compliant with the contract that allows it to exist. That was it.
That's simple. That was a short show.
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. That's all we wanted.
Yeah, and I listen to a lot of people go on about things, but it's one thing to complain. It's another thing to take action. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Talk is cheap.
Yeah, it really is. Well, okay, Tom. I know you've expatriated yourself. Could you maybe explain to people what expatriation and repatriation, what it means and how to maybe go about it? Maybe just go with what it means first.
Well, what it means is normally you would leave. Expatriation is to leave a society or a country and go to another one. That's repatriation. And what I found was that all the countries were corporations, and so I expatriated from the corporate structure and just returned to God's green earth.
This is very, very similar to like the free man on the land movement and others of such.
Pretty close to that. Yeah, and I actually posted it. It's posted on the web. I can post the link over here.
Okay. And for those listening, any links that get mentioned here, we will we'll share them and throw them in the description box below the video for later retrieval. It brings up an important thing, though. I mean, you're saying everything's corporate, right? I mean, it's kind of, in these circles anyway, it's pretty common knowledge that everything is corporately run. What's the significance of expatriating yourself?
Well, to me, it was more of a spiritual thing. I felt that this corporate structure being run under the Global Trust by the Pope is demonic in nature, and I did not want to be a part of that.
How did you discover that? In your years, how did you come to that realization? I guess
I started in family court. Go figure. That's where most of us start.
Oh wow.
Started researching how I was being screwed in family court, and started to find out that we didn't have courts really.
In what way? Like, were they self-serving? Were they?
Well, you couldn't call, like, at least the men in West Virginia really can't call witnesses. There were a lot of charges against me of abuse of my kids, and of course my kids love me, and I wanted to call to rebut her statements against me, because who else is going to rebut it other than the children? And I wasn't allowed to have the children testify. I couldn't bring in her violating her own restraining orders against me. I didn't have a voice, basically.
Wow. And now this is civil law, right?
Yes. Well,
as my understanding is, that's civil law. Now, in criminal law, you can rebut. You can cross-examine. You can do this in criminal law. Are you telling me that criminal law, like, supersedes, like, family and civil law?
Well, it's just made up. I mean, the at least in West Virginia, it's really bad. It's a sub-jurisdiction of statutory, it's almost criminal, but it's not quite. I mean, you can end up in jail from family court quite easily. I came very close a few times. But you don't have the opportunity afforded it. Here, the women, of course, they play the system. I was abused. You know, he yelled at me. Things that you can't really, it's hearsay. You know, he said, she said, basically. It's so hard to disprove what she's saying. But the burden is on the male to refute what she's saying. And sometimes it's hard to prove a negative that it never happened. How do you prove a negative?
Right. Wow. So basically, it's a battle of words, really. And, like, there's no hard, like, forensic evidence. Unless it gets to criminal proceedings, there's no forensic evidence and what have you.
No, I mean, at best you may have a police report. I mean, like, if you actually,
a witness testimonial.
Right. But most of the time it's just the woman saying, you know, you were this or that, or you did this to the kids. Right, yeah. But that's part of the social engineering to break up the family, which then breaks up the country.
Right, and that's been going on for, like, in terms of predictive programming, I mean, shit, that's been going on for ages now.
Correct, yeah.
Anyone who can't see that, like, you know, has got their blinders on, but, wow.
Now, fortunately, the time that I was going through it is the big time when, if they think you have some sort of problem, they want to put you to mental health, so in order to see my kids, I was forced to go see therapists and psychiatrists, and then came the medicines, and they dope you up to where you're a zombie.
Right.
That's the time we live in now, unfortunately.
Right. Well, because, you know, if they can't clinically diagnose a disease, then it's a condition, and conditions, you know, they have medications for conditions, right?
They have a medication for everything.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sometimes 10-15, because I was at 17 at one time, and that was to see my kids. Never had a problem before that. That was just part of the court said, if you want to see them, you have to go here.
Wow. If they can't,
sorry, that was me.
Thanks, Rick. It happens in every show, even for a second. Even if for a second, that's wild. But anyway, yeah, holy crap. So I'm just wrapping my head around, so we've got the whole civil thing. You don't want to be a part of it.
No, all I wanted was to see my kids. I mean, I've actually broke up with her. I couldn't take her anymore, and, we didn't get that.
I meant after the fact. I meant after.
Oh.
Like, you
well, no, because then we ended up in criminal court because they, they kicked in my front door without a warrant, kidnapped me, and then searched my home without a warrant and found my medical marijuana.
Right.
And we don't have medical marijuana here.
Right. I see the textbook complication right there.
Right, yes. Because I've been in two car accidents. I've got chronic back problems, chronic back pain, chronic migraines, and it was much better than being hooked on the opiates.
Right. Well, you know, and that's funny. That's funny, right?
2010, yeah.
2010.
And that's funny, you know, because, like, I have a friend of mine who, by the way, has passed away. He's passed away now. God rest his soul, good old friend of mine, but he was in a car crash. Guy used to be a front man for a band in my hometown, and he was in a car accident, broke his spine in three places. He was told he'd never walk again, what have you, but they had to induce a coma right after the accident. So he was in a coma for 3 weeks, if not longer, and he woke up, he was already addicted to the opiates. Like, he didn't even have any say, you know, in the matter, obviously. I mean, the situation being what it was, he didn't have any say in the addiction process, so instead of weaning him off of it right away, they kept him on it. In fact, they gave him the maximum script possible.
And I was actually, I did those at the same time I was going to the mental health facility. I was on opiates and muscle relaxers for the second car accident. So you had a combination of psychotropics, opiates, and muscle relaxers. That's a hell of a combination.
That's what we call a perfect storm.
I was a walking zombie for about 4 years.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah, well, this guy, being a front man for a band, you could probably know that he knew people that most people probably don't. And he was in a world of narcotics at one point. And, he just went down that rabbit hole and he never came back. And he's dead today because of it. Now, one would just outright blame the medical community, which, naturally, I do. But on top of that, it wouldn't be that way if they wanted to help people. If they wanted to help people, they would have weaned him off of it before he went to the street and was able to sell his scripts to his friends. And then when he ran out, he had to buy it back from his friends. You know what I mean? They would have thought, they would have thought differently if it wasn't about the money in pharmacology. You know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah, it's also about the slow kill. Remember, they want to get your SESCB account and your life insurance policy, and that's not killing you directly. They didn't put a bullet in you.
That's right. If they can make a few bucks in the process while you're going down.
Absolutely. Cash in, baby. Cash in.
Yeah.
It's the capitalist way, isn't it?
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Do you think you could update the audience here about what the status is now with this takeover of the government in West Virginia?
Well, on paper, it's already done. Physically, it's not going to happen with the group from last Monday's call, simply because it was the majority of foreign agents, and we're not looking for bloodshed or people to end up in jail needlessly. So we've called off the three gentlemen that did this paperwork have called off our support of anything happening. It's up to the foreign agents now to do whatever they want to do down there.
Right.
Right. So you were infiltrated with agents, provocateurs that were just stirring things up, and we're going to probably turn the entire thing into a big mess.
I think they were just going to leave you standing there alone in the street, thinking people were going to show up.
Well, I think a lot of them were. We had a lot of true people that were on the call, but they did get scared once they found out that it was infiltrated, and they didn't, same as me, they didn't want to put their friends in harm's way, and that was never what this was about. This was just giving our children an actual future.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be peaceful, but we have to realize that they defaulted, disarmed themselves. By their silence, they admitted the crimes that we set forth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I took one of your latest videos that you done, the one that you done with Phil, and kind of compress like the first 20 minutes and like 15, kind of squeeze it together, cut out, little moments there, and then made my commentary, and then I played out like the last 40 minutes of it and posted. And I saw a range of different reactions. And one of the ones that really irked me was when somebody said, Thomas Deegan is under house arrest. How nice of him to go and expect everybody else to go out while he sits in the comfort of his own home. And I got pissed off, because I'm like,
I was going, because if we were taking down the structure, the house arrest was null and void. That was the whole point.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to be there with the other three men. We were all three going to be there.
Along with everybody else, shoulder to shoulder.
Correct. Yeah.
That's right. I'm going to take a curveball, and I don't want to knock Pete Santilli at all, but what I do want to say is that he went to Phoenix to arrest McCain. Are you aware of what happened there?
No, I just know that he's an agent.
Yeah. Really? Well, because, he was talking about how he wants to do it constitutionally, and my problem with that is that even a low level, like someone who's been in the truth movement for a small period of time knows that the Constitution isn't worth the paper it's fucking written on.
Well, it wasn't written for us. It's a contract. It's an employment contract that we offer. We the people. So look at it as we're the boss of McDonald's, and this is the employment contract. That's all it is. It's not for us. It's not meant to bind us in any way. We're the authority. We're the manager. It's to bind them, the employees, and we've gotten, it's been turned around like it's supposed to bind us. No, we have unlimited and unalienable rights. The only way our rights end is where the next person's begins.
Yeah.
And we've gotten away from that, I think, worldwide, really.
Actually, you know, I've seen the collapse of the system from an outsider's perspective looking in, and what I mean to say is that, like, it's always been fucked up here in North America from day one.
Oh, absolutely.
But this model has taken shape and affected and grown all throughout Europe, all throughout Eurasia, all throughout Africa, all throughout everywhere. Australia, I don't want to leave any continent untouched here, but yeah, it's like a cancer. It's everywhere. It is like a cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is the kind of shit we were talking about back in the late 90s when globalization, you know, was like first kind of a buzzword, you know, like it really didn't become a buzzword until what, like 94, 95, I guess?
Somewhere through there, yeah.
Around there somewhere. And people were like, oh, it'd be great. You know, people were all like, oh, one world government would be awesome. Well, you know what? In a good world, yeah, a one world government would be awesome, but not if it's run by a bunch of, like, corporatocracy, like, scumbags. Like,
yeah.
Ah, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
It's for profit now, because really what you have is you have a global trust. These governments were set up to administrate the duties of that global trust. And unfortunately, you have criminals come in and find ways to work around that. So they go ahead and they get in debt, and then they turn it over to another service. I call them service corporations, because that's all they're really doing. It's supposed to be servicing the contract, providing those services. And it's just it's a way for the bankers to get you in debt and make you believe you're free because, oh, you have a constitution or all of this. It's PR. It's propaganda. It means nothing to them.
Okay, that was actually a decent segue into the contract of our lives, the straw man, the birth registration process.
Which wouldn't be bad if they allowed you access to your SESCP account as is required as a beneficiary. You have the rights to access that, and unfortunately they have closed you off from that access.
They've obscured people. I mean, you still have access to it, right? Correct? Not directly.
Normally, when you find the modern day, that day's way of getting in there, they'll change it the next day.
Right.
There's very few that have ever gotten true access to it. Because there's enough money in each of ours to where you never have to work or worry again. But they're eating it up, these governments, contractors. You know, they'll give you the commercial charges, and in court, that's really all that's happening, is that they're charging the trust, and you're being duped into thinking that you're the trustee and responsible to pay for it, and if you don't pay for it out of the trust, you pay for it out of your own pocket. That's right. Trust law. When in fact, you're the beneficiary. You don't have to do anything. You look at the trustee and go, handle this. I mean, why am I being talked to?
Well, that's why people pay by value. And there's a big thing on the internet. I saw probably a million videos on this and, like, you know, varied degrees of success and what have you. But paying by value against your straw man.
Yeah, it's hit or miss with it. It's hit or miss.
Yeah.
There's, because they're criminal. Remember, these guys are
criminals that you're asking to follow the law. It doesn't work that way, does it, with a criminal?
No,
By definition, they don't follow the law, so they're criminals.
You know what? I'll tell you this, is that criminals that I've known throughout my years that I've, you know, that I've met here and there in life, I trust them more because at least they say they're criminals.
Correct, yes. I mean, I might have to agree with you there.
But, you know, at least they're honest about it. I mean
when they're going to rob me, they're telling me they're robbing me. They're not saying, I'm here to help and you know, reaching around the back end.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Well, or says, give me your wallet, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, I understand I'm being robbed.
But it's then, no, these guys, they'll use all kinds of, you know, different kinds of documentation. They'll drag it out over 5 years, and all they had to do was say, just give me your wallet. But they'll just drag it out.
But, make it legal.
Or at least make it sound sexy so you go on with it.
Yeah. Well, I'll give everybody a hint here. If they're having problems understanding what's happening in government, there was a wonderful gentleman from the 1830s to the 1880s named Lysander Spooner.
Yeah.
And if you've never read some of his, what he wrote was just a bunch of short articles, and it's compiled into five volumes. If you go there and just read a few of them, you'll start to understand the hypocrisy of government and why we don't actually need it. Other than for certain things, like you may want to come together as a group of people to have a road in your county or a bridge, or you may want water services, so you need a group of people to come together to make that happen. The rest of it is just about them enslaving you and revenue.
Right. Yeah, they'll tax everybody, even though only 10% need the bridge.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, you can break all law down to two things. That's contract law and maxes. And if you can learn those two things right there, and we have two documents on HUDOC. I'll get you the link here in a little bit. It's what, a total of 32 pages. If you can read 32 pages, you can actually operate in the world even with government and be able to win almost every time just based on those 32 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple.
Well, I've heard a lot of things about just going to court and fighting off not necessarily bills, not things that you incur that like you use. Like I'm brass tacks. Like if I use it, I intend to pay for it.
Correct.
But I'll give you an example. I moved to British Columbia. In the first couple of months I was here, I had to apply for unemployment insurance, or actually continue. I had to carry over my unemployment insurance over from Ontario. So what happened is I had to wait a month. So they had to sign me up for welfare, and then they hand me BC Medical, and I didn't ask for that. I didn't even sign papers saying I want BC Medical. But it was part of the package, right? So I got signed in. I got subscribed, if you would. And that was 4.5 years ago. Now they think I owe $3,600 for BC Medical, $60 a month, every month.
Sounds like a scam to me.
Yeah, I didn't even ask for it. Like, I didn't sign for this. They just keep sending me a bill. I think I went to the doctor's office once. And I probably paid that in taxes I buy my cigarettes with. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break.
And I'm going to go ahead and post here the link to the law documents, because you, at least here in the States, it's a military tribunal. And you can't show up. Otherwise, you give them jurisdiction. So there are documents that we formulated, that I formulated as part of my criminal case for growing medical marijuana, that people can use. It's up to them. It's free. I've never charged for them. So I'll post the link over for that, too.
Okay, great. And, yeah, guys, for those just tuning in, all the links that get talked about here, we will post in the description box here on the YouTube page for it.
Yeah, no, I'm beside myself on this issue. Like, when it comes to, I don't even know how to phrase it properly. It's kind of like a confusion of what your responsibility is versus what their responsibility is, and then who's accountable for what. You follow?
Yeah, I do. And the great thing here is that what they're taking you into court for, at least in the states, is malum prohibitum, statutory law. And so if you attack that from a contract angle, which these law documents do, they don't have a contract with you, and so it's not applicable.
Actually, that's a great thing. You brought up a great point. If you could tell the listeners what a contract specifically needs in order to be lawful.
Let me do it according to, well, because I have this. I would like to keep in line with what we have posted here. So let me pull it back up real quick, because I have a slightly smaller version that I use, which is a little older in law, but this is more of the modern day contract law.
Right. Now, afterwards, maybe state the difference between the two.
Okay. So what you really have is someone offering or proposing something, and then you have the other party accepting it.
Right.
And that forms an agreement. And it's got to be something that is lawful. You can't put out a murder contract. That's not a valid contract. It's not enforceable.
Right.
That
goes against common law.
Correct. And you both have to be of age. You both have to have consideration. You know, if I hire you to mow my lawn, you mow my lawn, I'm getting the service of you mowing the lawn, you're getting the service of payment. You both come out with something. I may have gotten a better deal, but you signed into it.
Right. Hey, I just want to back up just a quick spot there. When you said of age, now, there's no definitive age. It's the age as agreed upon or voted in by the state or by the community that you're in, correct?
Or is there
an actual age?
Well, at common law, it could be anywhere from 15 to 21. Most states, it's 18. Or most countries, let's say, it's 18.
Right.